हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
सो हियर सीक द ब्लेसिंग्स ऑफ ऑल द वैष्णवास सो दैट आई कैन स्पीक समथिंग वर्थ वाइल फॉर द ग्लोरिफिकेशन ऑफ द लॉर्ड एंड द प्यूरिफिकेशन ऑफ माई हार्ट। सो हियर परीक्षित महाराज आफ्टर बीइंग the recipient of unwarranted curse has decided not to retaliate, not to defend, but to surrender to the will of the Lord. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that we are all implicated in this complicated world by which we commit sins, even if it is unintentional. And that is why it is very difficult to actually stay pure in this world. And what is the way to become pure? Prabhupada explains two things. The last line of the shloka, Muni Vrato Mukta Samasta Sangaha. Mukta Samasta Sangaha means that when we give up materialistic association, that enables us to give up committing further sins. Many of us are devotees who have given up materialistic association, but still we are impelled towards sins because in our mind, the impressions of our past materialistic associations are still there. But when we give up that mukta samasta sangaha, then the further sinful reactions, sinful actions will stop. And muni vrato, the vows of a sage. What is that vow? He says, Dadhau mukunda angring ananya bhavo. He gave himself to the lotus feet of the Lord. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Amara nahi to ami. My dear Lord, I am no longer mine, I am your property. So in this way, by constant remembrance of the Lord, whatever past sins we may have committed, we become purified of that. And here there is a very cherished verse for Vaishnavas where the Lord says, the Bhagavatam proclaimed that if somebody is surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord, then even if Vikarmaya Chotpatitam Kathanchit, that by chance, kathanchit, if somebody commits some sinful activities also, then dunoti sarvam rudisannivishtaha. The Lord from within the heart cleanses such a person. So, Parikshit Maharaj has decided to dedicate himself utterly, without any distraction, ananya bhava, for the satisfaction of the Lord. By absorbing himself in a vow of hearing for 7 days without eating and sleeping. Certainly, it is a great inspiration for all the generations of devotees to come to see Parikshit Maharaj's dedication in hearing the message and thus absorbing himself. So, the sacrifice of life is glorious. Even more glorious is the life of sacrifice. Yes. If, like it happened in the history of ISKCON, some places some bandits attacked, and the deities and some devotees came in the way and they laid down their life and they went back to Godhead. It's glorious, it's very inspiring, the sacrifice of life. Even more glorious are those devotees who throughout their life, day after day, sacrifice on the altar of service to Guru and Krishna, the material desires, the ego, the conditionings, the ambitions, separate from the Lord, and continue to unflinchingly serve the Lord. Parikshit Maharaj, of course, did both. His life itself was a sacrifice. And at the end, now he is doing the sacrifice of life. So today is the disappearance day of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who exemplifies the life of sacrifice. There are many vital reasons why we discuss the glories of the great Vaishnava Acharyas. So I will mention 5 of them here. First and foremost, the glories of the devotees are very pleasing for the Lord. Even more than discussing his own glories, the Lord becomes most pleased if we discuss the glories of his devotees. Just like if you praise a father, he's happy. But if you praise the son before the father starts jumping in joy. So similarly, we can very easily please the Lord by glorifying his great devotees. And the pleasure of the Lord automatically means what? Dhunoti sarvam hrudi sannivishta. The Lord will purify our heart. When the Lord becomes pleased, he reveals himself more. Just as if a wealthy person is pleased, He may give something in charity, but the Lord is pleased. He gives the best gift, which is He Himself. He manifests Himself in our heart when He becomes pleased with our service. And that is the greatest gift that He can give, because that attraction to the Lord is a solution to all problems. That will take us back home, back to God. So, first is for the pleasure of the Lord and for the purification of our heart. Secondly, we also, when we hear about the great Vaishnava Acharyas and their life, and we see the historicity of the Vaishnava tradition, the word historicity means historical authenticity. That means we see that this is, generally in material world, especially in Kali Yuga, in the modern times, often as devotees we feel we are in a minority. There are so many people who are materialistic and we are such a few small group of people practicing. But then when we see that there are so many people throughout the history for millions of years who have been practicing the path of pure devotional service, the historicity itself gives us a tremendous faith that it's not that something strange I am doing, it's something glorious that I am doing. And not only that, further when we hear about the Vaishnava Acharya's life themselves, we understand their glory. Then we start taking pride in identifying with them rather than identifying with our materialistic connections. Actually, we cannot give up pride fully. Either we have to have material pride, just like a worldly person. No, okay, I am working in so-and-so company. I am working in so-and-so organization. That is the sense of identity and pride that they get. But as devotees, that pride will bind us in the cycle of birth and death. But if you feel proud, yes, I am coming in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, where there are so many great acharyas, so many glorious personalities. That identification is actually an identification with Krishna. And that identification will lift us up. So, by hearing about the glories, we want to connect ourselves more with them. We are not shy to identify ourselves with them. We are proud, not because we are great, but we are connected with the great. Not only that, when we hear about the glories of the Vaishnava Acharyas, then we feel inspired to take shelter of them, to pray for their mercy. And by praying for their mercy, we get their mercy. And in this way, we advance. So, that's why we hear the glories, to be able to pray wholeheartedly. And lastly, when we further hear about their lives and see the struggles and sacrifices that they went through to pass on through the ravages of time the sacred message of God consciousness, we feel grateful to receive it and we become recommitted to share it with others. So by seeing their struggles, we will become inspired in our struggles. Our struggles internally against our anarthas and our struggles externally against the worldly situations. So therefore, it is very important for us to discuss the glories of the great Vaishnava Acharyas. So today, we'll make a humble attempt to talk in brief about the infinite glories of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So, I tried to make this in terms of an acronym based on his name. So, we'll try to see how much we can discuss in the allocated time. So, a pure devotee, often materialistic people think that a spiritualist means he's good for nothing. He's lazy, he does not do anything. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the antithesis of this idea. So, the pure devotee's characteristic as described by Rupa Goswami in the Bhaktivinoda Sindhu is avyartha kalatvam. He will not waste a single moment. And that is the hallmark of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life. So B is busy. Now Lalit Prasad, his son, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was living in Jagannath Puri, wrote down his daily schedule. It's very amazing. So he would sleep generally by 7:30 to 8 and wake up by 10 o'clock. 10 to 4 every day he would write. He would write either in English or in Bengali, or even in Sanskrit, some things he wrote. And then from 4 to 4:30 he would take a little rest. 4:30 again he would start. He would wake up and then he would, after washing and cleaning himself, he would start his chanting. And till 6:30 he would chant. He would always chant with his beads in his bag and never show the beads. And at 6:30 he would start reading. He would start answering letters, 6:30 to 7:30, whatever letters he had, he would answer those letters. 7:30, he would read different literatures and ponder over different religious questions. 8:30, he would receive guests, if there were any guests, or if there were none, he would continue his study. And while studying, he would pace up and down in his veranda, pondering over questions, sometimes talking to himself, as if preaching to an invisible person, to stimulate a thought process by which he would write the coming night. At 9:30, he would again take rest for 15 minutes. 9:45, he would wake up and take breakfast, which was also fixed, half a quart of milk, two chapatis, and a little sabji. And then 9:55, he would don his dress. He would wear the dress of a magistrate, and then the personal train for him would come, and he would go to the court. And 10 to 1 he would work, and even his colleagues would be astounded by his capacity to work. What would take others at least half an hour to decide the cases, he would decide in 5 minutes. And writing the judgment would take others 10-15 minutes, he would write a detailed judgment in 2 minutes. So every day in 3 hours he would hear between 30 to 50 cases, while others finished only 10 cases. And then 1 o'clock he would return back to his home in his carriage, take bath, take lunch, and 2 o'clock he would return back, and 2 to 5 again he would continue his hearing of the cases and giving the judgment. 5 o'clock he would come back, and if there were any preaching engagements, he would go out, or he would write commentaries, he would state his commentaries to a person who would listen to his dictation and write down, or he would receive visitors if any would come. And that at 7:30 he would take his dinner, which was also fixed, two chapatis, milk, and half a quart of milk, and a little fruit, and he would take rest. So with this he kept a pocket watch, and he always was on time and on perfect schedule. So that was Bhaktivinod Thakur, and that was how Prabhupada writes on one. Prabhupada speaks in a very amazing lecture on his disappearance day. He says that is the beauty of the life of Bhaktivinod Thakur, that although he had very heavy responsibilities in his office, a magistrate is not a very light job, and he had heavy responsibilities at home, he had 10 children, but in spite of that, he preached and he established almost something like 5,000 centers all over Bengal and Orissa, where he would be just small Namhat centers where people would practice the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Not only that, he wrote over 100 books. So he says this is certainly not possible for any ordinary materialistic person, but Bhaktivinod Thakur was empowered by the Lord, and that's how he was able to do it. Now of course, the empowerment by the Lord doesn't mean that the devotee doesn't have to struggle, doesn't have to endeavor. Because of his regulation, he could channelize the empowerment of the Lord and utilize it to do constructive service for the Lord's mission. So that is busy. H is humble. We see Bhaktivinod Thakur was, from the material point of view and the spiritual point of view, highly respectable. From the material point of view, a judge is a magistrate is a very respectable position, and from the spiritual point of view, he was such an exalted soul that renunciates would come and hear his classes. We know Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was a Babaji, he was a renunciate, and Bhaktivinod Thakur was a grihastha, but he would come and hear from him and take his, and eventually took diksha from him. So although he was so exalted materially and spiritually, and Bhaktivinod Thakur was respected in all of, at that time, Bengal, Orissa, Bihar, all these three states, because he had travelled during his service to different places. So although there was not a trace of vanity in him, the Amrit Bazar Patrika, which was the major newspaper in those days of the eastern part of India, wrote an article on 6 April 1894 that Kedarnath Datta, Babu Kedarnath Datta, who was earlier the magistrate and who has now taken voluntary retirement, has decided that to build the temple in Navadvip Dham, for which he has founded the Gaur Vishnu Priya Trust, he himself will be going to the house of every citizen of Bengal and ask for charity. So then the article write that if Babu Kedarnath actually carries out his resolve, we hope that any Hindu who is fortunate enough to have the feet of a devout bhakta like Babu Kedarnath that grace their house will not refuse to contribute his bit to this glorious cause. So this humility was noted even in the newspaper. Not only that, we see his humility in the way he writes his songs. Amar jivan sada paperat nahi ko punya ralesh. That is the glory of a devotee, that when he realizes the glory of the Lord, he feels himself insignificant. The material, the worshipper of the Lord or devata, of the demigod with materialistic consciousness, he thinks, yes, this particular deity is great and I am also great. But actual devotion means the Lord is great and I am insignificant. And that is what we see, heartbreaking, when we see actually the kind of humility he is expressing. So that was Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And A is Acharya. And the editor of the Amrit Bazar Patrika, when he heard about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he came to interview him for his newspaper. That here is a magistrate and here he is doing such spiritual work, the Shishir Kumar Ghosh. And after that, he wrote an article, a big article in the newspaper. And he wrote, I have not met the six Goswamis, but after meeting Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I feel he is the seventh Goswami. That is how he got the title, the seventh Goswami. So, and that is the title of the book, Biography by Rupa Vilas Prabhu of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So, he was so regulated, so sense-controlled, so devoted and dedicated, that even a worldly person could not but applaud his amazing character and life. That is the Acharya. Acharya means that by his behavior, even if somebody doesn't understand or practice the philosophy that Acharya is teaching, just by seeing his life, the person becomes amazed, inspired, transformed. That was Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he was Acharya also in the sense that he preached. You know, Acharya means one who lives and one who preaches. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a vigorous preacher, and he would preach in wherever he went. You know, his government job would take him to different places, and wherever he would go, there would be a revival of pure devotional service as per the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And as Acharya, it was he who established, systematized the worship in Jagannath temple when he was made the in charge of the Jagannath temple by the British government. He was Acharya also in the sense that he initiated. The word Acharya means three things. First is that one who behaves. Second is one who teaches. And third is one who initiates. So in all the three senses, so he also initiated many, many people and he made them into his disciples, and in this way he continued the tree that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, tree of Lord Chaitanya, the Prema Kalpataru. So further, we don't have time, so I'm going quickly. K is kind-hearted. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was such a person that anybody who would come to ask him for help would never go away disappointed. And whenever a person who has met him once would go to meet him, actually that person would always go with a smile, because he knew, I'm going to meet a well-wisher, a friend. So that was the warmth of his personality. And after Bhaktivinoda Thakur departed, the people of Bengal in that part, they established a Bhaktivinoda Thakur Memorial Committee. And they said, we should do research in his life and write his biography. And three different people, MN and scholars at that time, who wrote his biography. So they were all touched by his kind-heartedness. He was completely non-envious of anyone, and he would never speak a harsh word. He would never correct anyone unless he was completely confident that that person was at fault. And the several people who eventually he corrected, they always felt purified and uplifted, never dejected or rejected by his correction. So that was his kind-heartedness. We know Advesha Sarabhutana Maitraha Karuna Evach. It is amazing how Bhaktivinoda Thakur could relate with all kinds of people. and befriend them, and through that friendship lift them up to Krishna's lotus feet. So we'll talk later about his very special relationship with the Englishman. So then T was talented. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was, as I mentioned, so talented, so materially competent, that he would excel all the other judges in their work. But not only was he materially talented professionally, but he was talented with respect to his learning. Now he wrote over 100 books. He was a very good poet. See, on one side, he's a philosopher, he's a poet, he was a singer. He would compose his songs and he would sing those songs, and he would attract people to Krishna's lotus feet. And actually, as a very multifaceted personality, he is intelligent such that any topic he would take up, practically he would not forget it anytime. And he would analyze it thoroughly and present it. Those of you who have read Bhaktivinod Vani Vaibhav will find the depth of his understanding of philosophy. Bhaktivinod Vani Vaibhav, for your information, is a book which is a compilation of questions and answers with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And many deep and vital principles of devotional service are conveyed through the very easily approachable means of question answers by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Further, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was, as I said, IS, intellectual. Right from his childhood, he wrote his first book at the age of 12. That was called Harikatha. His second book he wrote at the age of 13, or Kumbhani Kumbha Yuddha. And he, by the time he was 18 years old, he had mastered six languages. He had mastered Sanskrit, English, Oriya, Bengali, Persian and Arabic. So he could speak fluently in all these languages. He had memorized sections of the Puranas and Upanishads, and he could quote them at will. Not only that, when required in debate, he could quote entire sections from the Bible and Quran. He had a prodigious memory. And he would write in such a way that the issue, there would be no question left. When a person starts reading his writings, they're practically all the possible questions that a person may have about that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has already anticipated them and answered them. So there was at that time a prominent intellectual who wrote this Vande Mataram. Bankim Chandra Chatterjee. So he wrote a book on Krishna, and he heard that this Babu Kedarnath Datta is also Krishna Bhakta. He was pleasantly surprised, because at that time the Krishna Bhakti had fallen into disrepute, because we know Sakale Neha Mahata Yogo Nashta Parantapa. So after Lord Chaitanya, there was upsurge of devotion in both Bengal, Orissa on this side, and Vrindavan on the side, where the Goswamis were there. But after that, when the Mughals came and desecrated Vrindavan, then over there the bhakti became unmanifested. Then Vishwanath Chakra Thakur and Baldev Vidyabhushan came, and they rejuvenated it all. Of course, at that time, at the time of the Goswamis only, most of their associate, Narottam Das Thakur, Shyamanand Pandit, were told to go to Bengal and Orissa. And they were preaching over there, and they were doing very powerful preaching. But a lot of Appa Sampradaya started coming in. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had made a list of 12 Appa Sampradayas. Those who would take the name of Lord Chaitanya, but they would teach deviant teachings. And especially, these people would imitate the Ras Leela of Lord Krishna. And in this way, Vaishnavism or devotion to Krishna had become synonymous with immorality. And that's why, if at all there was any respectability for Vedic spirituality, that was for the impersonalistic version of spirituality. There is absolutely no respect for the Vaishnava version. So it was in such a circumstance that Bhaktivinoda Thakur came. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur preached in such a way that he brought back respectability. How did he do that? He used his position as a magistrate for that purpose. As a magistrate, actually, for a Vaishnava to serve a yavana, mlecha yavana, is actually very degrading. But a devotee doesn't see these material considerations. He was just thinking, what is it that will bring respectability to the Vaishnava Sampradaya? So he saw that by connecting himself with the British government and the British Raj, which was respectable among the intelligent people at that time, this, he would be able to bring back respectability. So this Bankim Chandra Chatterjee, he gave his book to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He says, can you review it and give me some inputs? So it was all showing Krishna as a metaphorical personality and totally speculative. So after the meeting, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I would like to talk with you after reading the book, he said. And then they talked for 4 days together. And after 4 days, Bankim Chandra Chatterjee reviewed the whole book completely, changed it. And in the mainstream literature written about Krishna, Bankim Chandra Chatterjee's is the first book which does not treat Krishna as a mythological or metaphorical personality. But not only as a historical personality, but as a supreme personality. So actually we see the influence of Bhaktivinoda Thakur to make another intellectual change his opinion. And it is not just a passing opinion, it is an opinion which he has written in a book. To make him change that is not easy, but that was the power of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's intelligence. And that had a profound influence, not only at his times, but from his times onwards. So, he is visionary. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a visionary in the literal sense that he had many, many visions. The most famous of his visions was when he was searching for the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, he had analyzed the Acharya's writings, he had studied the cartographic maps, he had talked with the elderly residents, and he was sure that the place which was claimed to be as Yogapeet was not Yogapeet. But where was it? So initially those people who were making a money by calling their particular place a Yogapeet, they said, this is the Yogapeet. And eventually when Bhaktivinoda Thakur proved that this is not the Yogapeet, they said, oh, Yogapeet has got buried underwater. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur thought about it. It is a Mother Ganga will never deprive the world of the mercy of the place where Lord Chaitanya has appeared. He was praying, and one day he was on his terrace and suddenly he saw a great effulgence on the other side of the Ganga. And he was wondering what it is. And the next morning when he went over, he saw that was a land belonging to some Muslims. But curiously enough, there was Tulsi luxuriantly growing over there. That was very interesting because the Muslims never take care of Tulsi, and Tulsi doesn't grow luxuriantly unless somebody takes care of it. But because Tulsi was marking the place of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance, so that was one of his most wonderful and vital contributions, that he rediscovered the place of appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he discovered it around 1890, and in 1895 he established the temple over there, the Gaur Vishnu Priya temple. Of course, the temple which is there now in Yogapeet, was, that is a bigger temple that is constructed by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who also constructed a small side temple for Bhaktivinoda Thakur at the same place which we see now when we go to Yogapeet. So he also had the vision of the Adbhut Mandir, that magnificent structure that would glorify Lord Chaitanya, would depict the universe, and which Prabhupada and his successors are now working to fulfill. But apart from that, he was a visionary also in the sense that he envisioned how the preaching would spread all over the world. He was the first person who seriously contemplated and activated the process of sending the message of Lord Chaitanya all over the world. It was he who wrote the book, Lord Chaitanya and His Teachings, His Life and Precepts, and sent its copies all over the world. An eminent scholar from Germany came to meet Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he said, you are saying that this church, he used the word church, that this church of universal love for God will spread all over the world. How will this happen? He says, yes, it will soon happen. A powerful commander will come and make it happen. So he made that prediction. We know that. When will that day come when people from all over the world will come and practice Krishna consciousness? Chant the names of Jai Sachinandana Gaura Hari. Jai Sachinandana Gaura Hari. There in Navadvip. So he was a visionary, envisioned the preaching of Krishna consciousness spreading all over the world. And I was innovative. He was extremely innovative in his preaching. How is that? We'll see various different aspects. First is with respect to his books. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the first person to bring about a dialogue between Vedic philosophy and Western philosophy, the dialogue being written by a Vedic Acharya. There are many Western scholars who had done such a thing before, but he was the first person. And his books, he compared, he had already, actually Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he manifested his Leela in such a way that earlier he was agnostic, where he did not reveal his divine identity. At that time he read practically all the Western philosophy. And then, after reading the Western philosophy, finally he thought that I should read about Lord Chaitanya. He had heard about Lord Chaitanya and he was attracted in his childhood. But the followers of Lord Chaitanya at that time disillusioned him. And he thought they will probably not have any philosophy. What is the use of reading? So then, when he decided, let me find out more about Lord Chaitanya, somehow he was mystically attracted. So he had to search for 6 years to get a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita. It becomes so obscure. Although it is a philosophical as well as a biographical masterpiece, it is not available only. When he got it, he understood that among all the teachings that I have studied, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings are the highest. He felt, I was born and brought up in Bengal and I have read literature from all over the world. But now I am reading the literature of the Lord who appeared in Bengal and that is the highest. So, actually this was the Lord's arrangement by which, because he had read all the Western philosophers and then he read Lord Chaitanya, and he by his own personal realization and understanding was convinced about the superiority of Lord Chaitanya. So he became the most competent person to explain the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy and its superiority over the Western philosophy. His one particular book, Chaitanya Shikshamrita, that is an amazing book in which he takes one by one the Western philosopher, just like Prabhupada has done, dialectic spiritualism. And of course, dialectic spiritualism is a little informal in the sense that it's conversation. But Chaitanya Shikshamrita is more formal, more serious. You know, he takes one by one the philosophies and points out the deficiencies. And he points out how the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy is superior. At the same time, he also had to adopt certain unconventional strategies, because the intellectual hostility to pure devotional service was so much at that time that if he had taught as Krishna is the supreme personality and he had relationship with gopis which are transcendental, you know, he would just have been rejected by the intellectual community. So he wrote a particular book called Krishna Samhita, in which he presents Krishna consciousness in a way that the modern mind can appreciate. So Krishna Samhita is a book like a bridge. So in Krishna Samhita, he does certain things which no other acharya can do. But what he does is, he talks about the Vedic philosophy in terms which the Western people can understand. And then gradually by gaining their faith in his other books, he gives the complete Vedic philosophy. So in that sense, he was very innovative in his presentation of the philosophy. So that was for the Western people. But for the Bengali people itself, the Bengali and Odia people, they had all these Sahajiya tendencies. So for them, he presented that same philosophy through Vaishnava songs. And there were all these Sahajiya groups. They would corrupt the philosophy, but they would present it in attractive songs. And people would get attracted and they would just sing that. So he presented the pure philosophy in terms of simple songs which would help the common people to actually glorify the Lord in a way that they could easily relate to and relish, and in this way they were able to take to the path of pure devotional service. So actually this is what we see in Maharashtra Tukaram Maharaj did, and that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur did over there on a much much bigger scale in one sense. So his Vaishnava songs are his lasting legacy for all of us. Most of us have not read Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books, but we have all sung his songs. So in this way, we are all experiencing and relishing the legacy that he has left for us. He was also innovative in the sense that he was the first acharya to bring organization into the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Organization means systematic preaching. So we know he created the structure with the Namahatta, the marketplace of the holy name. And with that, he actually preached. He created a structure, and the highest person in that that hierarchy, this organization, and the top person is the president or the chief executive officer or whatever. So here the highest person was called the bhangi, the sweeper. Why? Because he's sweeping the hearts of the people. Cheto darpana marjana. That is the most difficult thing to do. So that hierarchy was there, but it was a transcendental hierarchy with transcendental nomenclature. So he created that, and much of the preaching even today in Bengal is going on as per the model which Bhaktivinoda Thakur has set up. So in this way, he created organization. And Prabhupada, before he departed, he said that the Krishna consciousness movement will spread by organization intelligence. So Prabhupada writes that the Krishna consciousness movement in its pure form was restarted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was non-compromising. Although he was kind-hearted, although he was very gentle and loving, but as unflinching in preaching the absolute message of the absolute truth. His position was very unique. As I said, the British government, now they wanted some Hindu in their administration who would control the Hindus. So for example, there was, as we know, Bishak Sen, who was pretending to be God, and he was doing immoral and dangerous things. This Bishak Sen was a very peculiar personality. He claimed that he was the avatar of Mahavishnu, he was asked, where in the scriptures is this said? He said, no, this is an emergency avatar. Says, why? Because I have come to this world to save the great land of India from the oppressive Raj of the British. So in this way, he combined the idea of his divinity with the patriotic feelings prevalent at that time. And there are two other people over there who are also claiming to be Vishnu. So, but he became more popular, so he adopted them. He said, you become Brahma, you become Shiva. So Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva were incarnated to save India from British Raj. So that was their idea. Now, because they were making patriotic sounds, they became very popular among the people. And also they all had mystic powers by which they could cure sick people and show some miracles. So because the common people were with them, the British government could not touch them. And the British government decided to engage Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Now Bhaktivinoda Thakur had his own plan. His plan in exposing Bishak Sen was, how can an ordinary Jiva claim to be God and distract ordinary people from the worship of the real God to himself? That is the greatest offense. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had his hideout in the forest where people would go to him, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur went there, and this person was a mystic. Oh Babu Kedarnath, you are welcome. I was knowing that you are going to come. A person like you is very useful for me. When I become the king of India, I will make you the prime minister of India. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur just laughed and he said, you are not going to become the king, you are going to go into the prison now. He says, I am Jagannath, I am God. He says, oh, if you are Jagannath, then why have you left your temple? Why are you staying homeless in a jungle like this? He says, there is no Jagannath in the temple, there is just wood over there. Bhaktivinoda Thakur got angry. He said, catch him, arrest him. He had come, actually he wanted the policeman to come with him, but the policemen are afraid to go. So they got 100 policemen to arrest one person. So they brought 100 policemen and they went to catch him, and he emanated sparks from his body. And everybody became frightened. And they fled. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur went and caught him himself and handcuffed him. He says, do you not know who I am? I will destroy you. He said, I know who you are. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, and caught him. And they brought a bullock cart and put him in the bullock cart, tied him up, and they went back. And as he was going, he was cursing, he was threatening, just see what will happen to you. He says, and finally, actually, all this was happening in front of his followers. So when they caught him, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur caught him, then the other policeman came and also caught him. So yes, he didn't want to be disgraced in front of his followers. So he said, okay, you are my Bhakta and I am the Bhakta Vatsal Lord. So if you want me to go to jail, I'll come with you. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, we'll say who is what. Come. Bhaktivinoda Thakur caught him. And they took him to the jail. And in the jail, he started fasting. He abstained from water and food so that he could get mystic power. And then, actually at that time, this created a very great uproar among the common people. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur became unpopular among the people, and the people the followers of the of this Bhishaksen, they inflamed the masses, and all of them together they started doing morchas. So when the court hearing was going on outside, the common people outside, they were doing morchas. He says, how can you arrest such a great person? You know, he's the incarnation of God. And they were actually condemning Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we see that it could have been so easy. If Bhaktivinoda Thakur just wanted to be popular, he could just have said, okay, arrest him. What do I have to do with him? We see that same. Prabhupada was also ready to court unpopularity to expose people who were claiming to be God. In the mundane vision, they might be respectable, but in the spiritual point of view, despite all the social service that they are doing, despite all the miracles that they are showing, their claim to be God makes them very sinful. So on the third day, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's daughter got terribly sick. Actually, the hearing was going on, and they said, just go and see Bhishaksen, what is happening at your home. And his daughter had severe fever, and she was on the verge of death. And his wife begged him, you leave him alone. Now, otherwise our daughter will die. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was firm. He said, let all of us die, but I will not let this wretch who claims to be God to escape. Then the court judgment went for many days. And the last day, that as I believe it was 18th day, he used all his mystic power. Now, he was doing the fasting, and he was trying to actually attack Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was protected by the Lord, and that's why he first attacked his daughter by his mystic power. Now finally, on the 18th, they used all his mystic power, and when Bhaktivinoda Thakur got up, he couldn't get up. He had severe chest pain. He couldn't even move his hands and legs, but he was determined. So actually, they got a stretcher, and the stretcher, they took him to the carriage, and the stretcher lying down, he went to the court, and somehow they took him in the stretcher to the court seat, and he sat down over there, and he was hearing. And at that time, one of the British officers over there, Bhaktivinoda Thakur indicated to him, and he understood that all the mystic power of this yogi is kept in his hair. So as this, he was going for the hearing, he caught him from behind and shaved him up. And as soon as he shaved him up, his yogi was looking very erect and sort of effulgent. He just crumbled completely. And he crumbled and he became completely weak. And outside, all these morchas were going on, condemning Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But when he collapsed completely, he had been fasting for all these days. It was the only mystic power that was holding him. And he had kept it reserved, stored in his hair. That was cut off, he lost. Then the people understood that he is not God. He's just a yogi, and he lost his yogic power. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave the judgment, and he was put in jail. And he died in the jail itself, because he was disgraced and he had lost all his power. And then the people understood that actually Bhaktivinoda Thakur was doing a great service for them, and they were doing a disservice. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was always non-compromising. Similarly, the British government put him in charge of the Jagannath temple, so that the king of Jagannath at that time was embezzling the treasury of Jagannath. He was using the treasury for his own royal luxury. And they put him, he put in charge, and he made all strict timings for worship. He disciplined all the pandas. And then, when there was no treasury there, he proved that the king had embezzled the treasury. So he told the king, either we'll put you in jail, or from now on, from your royal treasury, you have to sponsor the Chappan Bhog of Jagannath. So he chose the second option, to save himself from the jail. But because he was the second option, his treasury started depleting. And he got wild. He wanted to kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But because Bhaktivinoda Thakur was in the government, and the king was like under the government at that time, he couldn't do that. So he performed a Shiva Mahayagyam. And he employed 100 Brahmins to offer Ahuti. And it was a 7-day Yagya performed by 100 Brahmins, at the end of which a Vetal would come, and that would go and attack and kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So the news went to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur was fearless. He took shelter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the 7th day, the final Ahuti was given. And the moment when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was supposed to die, the king's own prince fell down dead. What happened is the Vetal came and tried to go and kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur was protected by Lord Vishnu. The Vetal went back and killed the person who performed the yagya only. So he was unflinching, non-compromising, and the Lord protected him. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur was an opportunist. He took every opportunity. It was very amazing, as I mentioned earlier. He took employment in the British government so that he could give respectability. And he was such a good magistrate that when that wherever he wanted transfer. You know, he wanted to, sometimes we have to take leave from our jobs to go for yatras. But when he wanted to go to dham, he would just get transferred to that dham. And if the government would say that, no, we cannot transfer you there, he said, I resign. He said, no, we want you there. You go wherever you want, but you stay in our government. Like that, he was in Krishnanagar, then he was in Puri, then he was near Vrindavan. And so for him, actually, his employment was just an excuse for spreading the mission, rejuvenating and spreading the mission of Lord Chaitanya. And of course, when he saw that he was aging and still he wanted to preach, then he exemplified how dharma viruddho bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshaba. He prayed to the Lord, my dear Lord, please send a son of Lord Vishnu, son, ray of Vishnu. And then the great Acharya Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur appeared. So, there are two ways to preach. One is that we go and make conditioned souls into devotees. Other is, we get devotees from other places to be born in our families. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur took this and he brought the great Acharya Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur into this world. And of course, D is his devotion. Right from his childhood, when he was a small child, his grandfather was a great devotee. And by the association of his grandfather, he was very attracted to devotional service. And one day his mother told him that when you go through the fields, there may be ghosts, so you chant the name of Ram. So he said, from that day, the name of Ram never left my tongue. Constantly he was chanting from childhood itself the name of Ram. And afterwards, when he remanifested his devotion, then he himself built the temple of Gaur Vaishnupriya in 1895. And then he wrote so many books, preached to so many people, and in 1906, he took Babaji Vas. He decided that, he retired from his life, and as he started living, took on the Vesh of Babaji Vesh, and started living like that. In 1910, he went into Nirjan Bhajan. 1906 to 1910, also he was meeting people and instructing them. But 1910, in material vision, he told that, I have got epilepsy, so that he would avoid the association of materialistic people. And what was his mood? His mood was that the Lord Chaitanya has come to give the holy name and flood the whole world with love of God. So if by my intense chanting of the holy names, I can make the Lord manifest as his holy name, that holy name will act as a magnet and attract conditioned souls from all over to come to Navadvip Mayapur Dham. And for 4 years he was constantly chanting. There is that plate, some of you may have seen it. What he wrote at that time, the holy name is the conclusion of the Vedas, the holy name is the purpose of tapasya, the holy name is the food, water and everything for a sadhaka, the holy name is the be all and end all, it's an amazing glorification. If one read that, it appears that there is nothing other than the holy name in the world. And that time he would blindfold himself and put himself in a small cabin and he would just fervently chant, and in this way, just as we have Parikshit Maharaj, absorbed in Krishna, he left this world. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur also departed on this very day, 84 years ago in 1914. He returned back to his eternal constitutional position as Kamal Manjari in the spiritual world. So we can pray to Bhaktivinoda Thakur that he give us the inspiration and dedication to receive the gifts that he has given and share it with the world. So we'll conclude with the pranam mantra of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sachidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanugavarayate. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki Srila Prabhupada ki Gaura Bhaktivrinda ki Itai Gaur Premanande.